Good morning, all. There's a very well-known phrase which most of us hope will never be addressed to us, but which is very common in TV dramas. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention, when questioned, something which you later rely on in court. The incident of the woman caught in adultery is one of several incidents quite close to his own arrest and trial in which Jesus is put in a compromising position by his enemies. Another, you'll remember of course, would be when they tried to trap him by asking whether it was lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not. And their aim clearly is to build up evidence they can use against him. So as these woman's accusers stand there fully armed with stones to smash her to bits, Jesus exercises his right to remain silent, and he bends down to write something in the sand. And I think maybe his looking down at the ground was an attempt to spare the woman's shame. You know, having been caught in the very act of adultery, it's hardly likely that her accusers would have politely asked her to put some clothes on before dragging her out and making her stand in full view of everybody. Be that as it may, because they persist with their question, Jesus feels compelled to break his silence, which he does with a brilliant response. If there's one of you here who has not sinned, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Brilliant, because who would dare to claim that he was without sin? St. John says, if anyone says he's not sinned, he's a liar. We're now coming to the climax of Lent, when Jesus himself will be put on trial before the Sanhedrin. And as we'll see, he exercises his right to remain silent, as he does in today's story. And I wonder why he did that. To me, it's as though he is giving his accusers time to reflect on what they're about to do, which is pretty horrendous, and how they'd feel if they were the accused standing there in the dock. And the woman's accusers clearly don't care about how she feels. But you know, if we put ourselves in her shoes, your sin is exposed, your dignity is gone, your fate hangs in the balance, you're shaking with fear, terrified at the cruel death, which they're all there with their stones, which in your mind will be the obvious verdict of guilty as charged that death will bring. Everything depends on what this man will answer. Your situation is hopeless. And then suddenly it's quiet. The shrieks of your accusers have stopped, the crowd has slipped away, and still confused and frightened, you glance up to see only the eyes of compassion in a stranger whose words have just saved your life. You listen, you know, hardly able to believe you are safe, as he says to you, "Go in peace and sin no more." Ironically, because Jesus is the only person there without sin, he's the only one with authority to throw the first stone. But he doesn't. He doesn't condemn her, but nor does he approve of what she has done. He doesn't minimize it, and he doesn't look for mitigating circumstances. He knows she's as guilty as sin. What he does do is offer her a new start. This poor woman was clearly on the edge of despair, but as we know, God despairs of no one, as we saw in the beautiful parable of the prodigal son last week. And the church's attitude is exactly the same. Hate the sin, love the sinner. As it says in the first reading, no need to recall the past, no need to think about what was done before. See, I'm doing a new deed. As we heard St. Paul there, you know, I forget the past and strain ever onwards, leaving all that stuff behind and with the new life that's been given me. I suppose, like the men in the story, most people know they are sinners, but very few seek forgiveness in the sacrament of confession. And maybe some people think they have a direct hotline to God, you know, so don't need his forgiveness mediated by a priest, even though it was Jesus himself who gave us this sacrament as the surefire way to get forgiveness. When you've been to confession, you know in God's eyes you are forgiven. The church teaches that we should go to confession at least once a year, even if we don't think we've done anything wrong. Why? Because we certainly have done something wrong. Nobody's perfect. And nobody, of course, is a judge in his own case. And then there are other people, more sadly if you like, who carry a burden round for years, unable to believe that they can be forgiven for what they've done. And if you are one of them, or if you know somebody that's one of them, think of today's gospel. Imagine yourself standing before Jesus, fully conscious of what you've done, which he knows already, by the way, and then remember his attitude to that woman, his understanding of her human weakness and his readiness to forgive. He knows that more often than not, we fail because we are at the mercy of our moods and our desires, and that deep down, each of us would love to go in peace and sin no more. In confession, his understanding, his compassion, and his forgiveness make all that possible. So confession really is good for the soul. Just as a, by the way, as an appendix to that, you know, I myself try to go to confession every couple of months, but since my confessor, Father Dakin, died, it's getting more and more difficult to find an opportunity with so few priests around. However, that's not the case for you and for parishes that do have a priest. I'm in the confessional here every Saturday morning from 10 till 10:30. And if that's not a good time, you can make an appointment over the phone or just ring the doorbell at the presbytery, which I'm happy to say quite a few of you already do. Finally, of course, we have the Lenten penitential service on the Wednesday of Holy Week at 6:30. It's not general absolution. We're not permitted to give that, but it's very user-friendly. So do think about coming to receive what will be the absolute certainty of knowing that any sins you have committed will be forgiven in this wonderful sacrament.